This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Ihayes Wuhib in Washington. Here is what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
71% of those surveyed say that they will feel more comfortable with armed security guards.
That's Dr. Kojo Asante at the Ghana Center for Democratic Development talking about the coming election. Details coming up. Also, life in the capital of Ethiopia's Tigray region appears to be slowly returning to normal. And Harare's mayor has been jailed. All these and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. A new survey shows Ghanaians are enthusiastic about voting in next week's general election. Ghanaians go to the polls to choose a new president and parliament on Monday. The study was conducted by the Ghana Center for Democratic Development, CDD Ghana. The report shows the public has confidence in the ability of the Electoral Commission to organize a transparent poll despite initial suspicion by opposition groups. It also states that the public experts, the security agencies, including the police, to maintain law and order to ensure peace during the election process. To learn more about the study and the expectations of Ghanaians ahead of Monday's polls, VOA's Peter Clote sat down with Dr. Kojo Asante, Director of Advocacy and Policy Engagement at the Ghana Center for Democratic Development.
So if you take the election stakeholders like the Electoral Commission, the security agencies and so on, I think the attitudes of Ghanaians generally was positive. And I think that is significant to note because considering the kind of challenges the Electoral Commission had confronted when it decided to completely compile a new register. So coming out of it with a positive, you know, sort of rating from the public, I think was a booster for them.
How enthusiastic are they? What about the issue of comporting themselves at the polls? Because some people are expressing concern that there could be violence. Others are saying Ghanaians have been known to be peaceful during elections. But what are the expectations about how peaceful and stable the atmosphere will be during the election process?
In terms of the readiness to participate, I think 9-10 say, you know, they would probably vote or they would vote on election day. Mm-hmm. And that is very high. The question is whether or not they will turn up on election day. But that shows that it's quite positive. I think on the violence side and the security issues, there are concerns. There are obviously concerns with vigilantism. So there's a statistic that I think was worrying, for instance. 71% of those surveyed say that they will feel more comfortable with armed security guards. Widespread.
Mm-hmm. So let me ask you about the policies of these major political parties. How are people responding to their policies, and will people vote on their policies based on your findings?
There's an interesting flip in terms of, I think, the two major parties. If you take their 2016 manifesto, of the MPP, it was about jobs and all of that. And then the NDC was about sort of, you know, continuing, you know, stabilizing and continuing the work that has already been started. And basically, there's been a flip. So now, if you still look at the NDC manifesto, it's about jobs. And so on. And then the NDC, MPP is now wanting the stability and the continuation and so on. So, in a way, what it does tell us is that the issues haven't changed. And if you look at their policy priorities, the top three, infrastructure, unemployment, I think, is either health or education, one or the other ones. So those issues still, at least the top two, still continue to be an issue for citizens.
I've heard some people say that the Electoral Commission has, you know, organized this election very well. Others are saying they are displeased with some of the things that have happened in the run-up to the election. But how comfortable are people, the public, about how the Electoral Commission will organize this upcoming election? And how comfortable are the political parties participating in this election?
I think at a popular level, from the pre-election survey, it's very clear that the trust ratings, the confidence is high, about 67% rated, quite highly. So they are seen to have, I think every electoral activity that they implement well, like just the recent presidential voting, the machines perform well, big issues with, names and people turning up and so on, no incidents. That then makes them even stronger in terms of giving more confidence, and the public also trusting them that they will deliver on election day. So I think every activity they do, and they do it well, would help them.
Ethiopian TV has released a video from Mekele, the capital of the Tigray region, where life appears to be slowly returning to normal. Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed has said major military operations have ended after federal troops captured Mekele on Saturday. However, leaders of the opposing Tigray's People Liberation Front, TPLF, say their forces continue to fight. It is not possible to independently confirm the claims of either side, as access to the region is restricted and the government has only partly restored telecommunications, which had been cut off. The United Nations and the Ethiopian government have agreed that aid workers can have access to civilians and refugees in Tigray. The UN has warned that food supplies for about 100,000 Eritrean refugees in Tigray had run out. The Ethiopian military launched its offensive into Tigray on November 4th, saying the TPLF had attacked military bases. The government says the operation was aimed at some members of the TPLF who say the fighting was a war on Tigray. The TPLF dominated Ethiopian politics for three decades until a popular uprising brought Abiy to power in 2018. Since then, the TPLF has complained that Tigrayans have been forced out of government posts. South African President Cyril Ramaphosa is expected to easily survive the first motion of no confidence in his leadership in the country's parliament. The African Transformation Movement, or ATM, says Ramaphosa has failed to deliver on promises made when he replaced Jacob Zuma in early 2018. The vote was originally set for today but has been postponed to next February. Darren Taylor reports from Johannesburg.
The ATM holds only two seats in parliament, but those two seats like making a big noise, says political analyst Ebrahim Fakir.
Many of us have always maintained from its very inception that the ATM is going to be a spoiler party, or a party which is there to destabilize rather than further debate or try and refine policy and extract oversight. So they achieve their purpose come what may.
Business leader and political commentator Mazwe Majola says the ATM's motion has zero chance of success.
Most of the political parties are not supporting it. However, if you look at it in a bigger picture, ATM will make a statement. ATM will make an impact because it will go into the annals of parliament that at some stage in 2020, President Ramaphosa had a motion of no confidence for him.
Majola says the ATM's action is successful at drawing attention to it and in casting a shadow over Ramaphosa's leadership. One of the ATM's leaders, Mazwanele Manyi, describes Ramaphosa as a failed leader of a failing state.
This is a man that came with a ticket of clean governance, but the very first thing in the financial year 2018-19, where the huge exponential growth in terms of the irregular expenditure, 61 billion rand. Beginning of the year, we were on some 34-year low in terms of business confidence.
The ATM says Ramaphosa has destroyed South Africa's economy by shutting it down completely during the COVID-19 pandemic when it wasn't necessary. It also maintains that instead of ending official corruption, as he promised, graft has blossomed under his leadership. As evidence of this, ATM members point to all the government officials arrested for fraud with regard to coronavirus personal protective equipment. As frivolous as it may seem, says Fakir, the motion of no confidence in the president is good for democracy.
It's necessary in the sense that it is one accountability measure amongst many that are available to parties. What I'm suggesting is that this then becomes an opportunity for the grandstanding of all these parties is to throw everything and the kitchen sink against the president and, of course, the ANC, because you don't just attack the person, you're going to attack the party as well.
Majola says the ATM's motion should serve as a warning to the president and his party, the African National Congress.
It gives a signal and a clear message that Ramaphosa, you are a president of the country. Yes, you are also a president of the ANC, but do put the country first.
As Majola puts it, Jacob Zuma always put the ANC's interests first, and now he's on his farm, awaiting trial on a long list of criminal charges. Many political analysts agree that the ANC has too much power and that any attempt to weaken it, including a motion as seemingly innocuous as that of the ATM, will ultimately result in better governance. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
The Harare mayor has been jailed following his arrest last week after his bail request was denied. He is facing charges of abuse of power for allegedly making sure that land was awarded to undeserving individuals. He is one of many opposition councillors that have been arrested for similar charges. Reporter Kudzai Zanawashi has more from Harare.
Tonderai Batasara is the lawyer for Harare Mayor Jacob Mafume.
The mayor, Mr. Jacob Mafume, is being charged with the criminal abuse of office in that he is said to have instructed the director of housing in the city of Harare to allocate two residential stands in Westley area to a relative of his and a colleague of his at work when these beneficiaries were not deserving of the allocation. Those are the allegations.
The mayor has denied charges against him. Analyst Vivid Gwede says the mayor's arrest is part of a wider government push to replace elected councils with appointed city commissions.
So we cannot rule out the fact that there has been concerted efforts from central government to interfere with the running of local authorities, sometimes basically just for the sake of the politics of it, because the councils are led by the opposition and the central government is led by the ruling party.
Sisulu Zedzai is a member of the opposition MDC and a shadow minister for local government. He says the interference is part of a ruling party effort to replace opposition city councillors.
The pattern of arrests of mayors, namely Mayor Maiko of Tungwiza and Mayor Mafume of Harare, is consistent with a clawback strategy of ZANU-PF of trying to get what they failed to get at an election. They are trying to dismember all local authorities and introduce commissions.
Nick Mangwana is the permanent secretary in the Ministry of Information. He denies Zedzai's accusation and says the national government wants clean, efficient local governments.
The reason for cleaning up councils is just to make sure they are clean and they service delivery. We want our refuse to be collected. We want clean water. But we want an organized urban setting, a settlement, which we do not have at the moment. So that, I think, trumps any other allegations people can come up with.
Mangwana says what is apparent is that councillors have been parceling out land corruptly, something that has prompted government to act. The Combined Harare Residents Association says appointed commissions are not the best option since they answer to the national government, not residents. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinabashi from Harare.
A former warlord from Liberia, Aliyu Kosia, went on trial in Switzerland today. According to the French news agency AFP, he is the first Liberian to face prosecution for war crimes over alleged atrocities during his country's bloody conflict a generation ago. Kosia, who was arrested in Switzerland in 2014, is accused of murder, rape, and a string of other crimes committed in the first of Liberia's back-to-back civil wars. Together, the wars killed some 250,000 people between 1989 and 2003. Kosia denies all charges. Social media in Cameroon are heightening political and ethnic tensions unleashed by the disputed 2018 presidential election. That's according to a report by the International Crisis Group. The ICG says social media platforms, especially Facebook, should better filter toxic content and promote verified pages to reduce the tensions. Moki Edwin Kenteka reports from Yaoundé.
The International Crisis Group report says Cameroon is already facing serious security challenges and should find a way to ease political tensions and stop offensive language, such as ethnic slurs, that are causing the Central African state to sink into violence. Are Elvis Ntui, the ICG's senior analyst for Cameroon, says hate speech and inter-ethnic tensions have increased since the October 2018 presidential elections. He says the hate speech problem could endanger Cameroon's stability.
This period has been marked by lots of street protests. The country is currently dealing with a separatist insurgency in its Anglophone regions. Also, the army is dealing with Boko Haram insurgency in the far north of the country with nearly daily attacks. Cameroon cannot simply afford to allow the ethnic and political tensions it's currently facing to rise to levels where they could constitute intercommunity violence.
President Paul Biya, who has been in power for 38 years, was declared winner of the elections. His victory is still contested by opposition leader Maurice Kamto, who insists he, not Biya, was the winner. Are says Cameroon can avoid a slide into instability by reforming its electoral system.
Crisis Group proposes that Cameroon strengthen its institutions, which are responsible for addressing discrimination and improving its policy of living together. Some of these include discussing with the extra parliamentary opposition in order to review the electoral system to make it more fairer and more acceptable.
Are says the ruling CPDM party and the opposition should take measures to address the excesses of their supporters on social media, especially Facebook. He adds Facebook should also help to check inflammatory language, provocative content, and fake news, which he says contribute to inflaming the ethnic and political tension. Government spokesperson René Emmanuel Sadi says there is growing hate speech through social media. He blames opposition parties that he says want to weaken Biya's rule.
The government of the Republic appeals to the majority of the Cameroonian people who have never allowed themselves to be misguided by unscrupulous politicians. The government, through my voice, exhorts Cameroonian men and women at home and abroad to thwart destabilizing maneuvers wherever they come from.
Thursday's report comes at a time when NGOs and journalism groups in Cameroon are warning against the use of media organs to propagate hate speech. Rose Oba, the national coordinator of the Cameroon Community Media Network, says journalists should not be used as propaganda tools.
If you even have an interview where you have attributes of like name labeling that may incite violence, We just come in to advise our members of the Cameroon Community Media Network as well as other journalists to be the first persons to do some kind of censorship around hate speech and fake news. Such words are unhealthy. Such words just come in to incite more violence. And definitely with our main tool, peace journalism, we use it to encourage reporters and editors to encourage a peaceful society.
The International Crisis Group says President Biya should be wary of leaving behind a country riven with fighting and separatist sentiment in Anglophone areas, but also by wider tensions endangering Cameroon's relatively amicable inter-ethnic relations. Molki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Nigeria's economy is now in its second recession in 5 years, and that has contributed to a doubling of prices for food and services. Gifta Gariga takes a look at the effect of this inflation on the average Nigerian.
According to the latest data from the National Bureau of Statistics, Nigeria's gross domestic product declined by 3.62% in the third quarter of 2020, marking a full-blown recession. Traders and buyers of goods at most markets in Abuja are lamenting the increase in the cost of items. A trader who sells food items said buyers' purchasing power has fallen because of the rising prices.
Everything costs for the market. Onions, the bag is 75,000. We are selling market, we don't have anything inside. The basket of tomatoes now, we are selling 1,000. We are crying for this Nigeria.
The trader also lamented the high cost of transporting goods to different markets. Transporters have increased their fares and traders and commuters are feeling the pain. Mr. Ugu is a transporter in Abuja.
I blame it to the bad government we have here. Because being an oil-producing country, I don't see the reason why we should buy food at such high price.
A civil servant, David Oroyo, says Nigerian workers are poorly paid and don't get regular increases to keep up with the daily rise in food prices.
Are we actually living? Where are they existing? You see how much you pay civil servants? And then you tell them to live within their means? Everything is going up. Government gives you with one hand and they take back with another hand.
Economist Paul Alaje said aside from the recession, there are other reasons Nigerians' food prices are rising.
Most of them are induced by policy somersault. First, Nigerian government has shut down borders, not putting in mind that there are a lot of supply gaps which imports from neighboring countries have helped us to fix.
Alaje said the government needs to be proactive and strategic about policies it adopts to resuscitate the economy. He, however, reiterated land borders remain closed and the country continues to suffer from security issues, including a militant insurgency in the country's north and in the Niger Delta region. Those issues, he says, hurt the economy. Nigeria had abruptly closed its borders in August 2019 to curtail the smuggling and illegal importation of drugs, small arms, food, and agricultural products into the country. For VOA News, this is Gift Agiriga from Abuja, Nigeria.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbili Abaro, thank you again for tuning in and choosing The Voice of America.
Brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bongo flavor to sukus, afrobeat to dumbolo and makosa to kwaito. The African beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
The Voice of America's Global News Program, International Edition,
brings you an in-depth look at the biggest news stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. Our correspondents gather the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 3:30 and 1705 UTC on The Voice of America.